You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Brett.
And I'm Steven.
And we are
the Broadway Husbands.
We're just your all-American married couple making their living in the arts and pursuing a growing family. On the Broadway Husbands podcast, we offer advice from our ordinary lives under extraordinary circumstances.
We are living proof that you can love who you love and love what you do. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss our weekly episodes. And if you really love us, make sure you leave a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. Take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram at Broadway Husbands.
And make sure you check out Broadway Life Apparel at BroadwayLifeApparel.com. We design new designs every month of t-shirts, hats, all kinds of really cool. We have face masks if you're looking for some masks.
What do the masks say?
They say, sing out, Louise.
Ooh, get it?
And we have some really fun theater-oriented for, you don't have to be working in theater to love these designs. And it helps support us and helps support the arts during this time. So check out BroadwayLifeApparel.com. Well, we took a break last week from episodes because on Wednesday we had an inauguration.
That's right.
We got a new president here in the United States.
Wait, we did?
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Guys, I'm totally kidding. I'm joking. Yeah. That was a joke.
And
I'm aware.
You know, while politics isn't our thing, you know, it's not really one of our topics, we are very excited for the change. I think it's a good thing. I think it's going to be challenging for some more than others, but I do think that it's an exciting time, and we thought instead of taking away from that celebration, we would just take the week off from recording podcasts, and so we're back with a new episode.
That's right, and on today's episode, we are going to talk about Brett's show, Charming. Is it just called Charming?
Well, Charming,
A Tale of an American Prince. Mm-hmm. So last weekend, we traveled to Fayetteville, Arkansas, where Brett was asked to perform his one-man show, Charming, A Tale of an American Prince, at the Walton Performing Arts Center. And it exceeded all expectations and was so much more emotional than I could have ever thought it would be, for so many reasons. So I just wanted to kind of just talk about your show and talk about your experience performing again. So first off, let me ask you, what is Charming, A Tale of an American Prince about? Please describe it for our listeners.
Well, it's the story of a prince from the kingdom of Texas who goes looking for his kingdom. Ha ha, me. And it uses the music of different princes. So I sing Sondheim songs from Agony, I do, Pippin. I do Disney princes, of course, and then, of course, Prince the Artist, among others. And so it's a very eclectic song selections. There's some really cool mashups my music director, Tracy Stark, and I came up with. And then I also had the help of an awesome director when we first developed it in 2013, Lenny Watts. So
nice. That's a very good description.
Thanks.
That is accurate, very accurate. So let's talk about the creative process of your show. When before this, you had done, I think, just one other one-man show, right?
That one wasn't story-driven, really.
It
was just songs.
It was just a cabaret. And so where did you write Charming? Where was it developed? And how did you meet your music director, Tracy Stark?
So it's 2013, as you know, was not a great year for us. That was like lucky number 13. And I was really down and out. And something popped up. I'm friends with John McDaniel, the music director, if anyone watched the Rosie O'Donnell show.
I'm sure a lot of people.
Yeah. And he posted something about the Eugene O'Neill Center Cabaret Conference. And literally, I just clicked on it, filled out the application, didn't read anything, as you know me, I tend to do.
Yeah, like, he's like, oh, I'm just going to try this. Oh, I signed up for this. I applied for this. He'll tell me all these things that he's applied for or tried out for. And I'm like, what? Wait, like, that's not even anything we've ever even talked about. But, I mean, at least this was, like, performing, right?
Like, yeah, so but I was totally just like, I didn't even read the details. I was just like, oh, that sounds cool. I mean, I'll apply. If the universe wants me to do it, I'll do it. That's kind of how I operate in the world, yes. Which is sometimes great and sometimes not.
Yeah. Sometimes it works out really well.
So John calls me and is like, hey, we love your application. We want to accept you. It's 11 days. It's in Connecticut. You know, there's housing provided. It's going to be like $2,000 or something like that. And I was like, no, I'm not even, I don't even have unemployment. I don't have health insurance. I haven't worked. It was a rough year.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not going to work for me. Sorry. I was like, maybe in the future, my employment will return and our expenses won't be so high. Cause we were living in the East Village. It was stressful. And he called me back and he said, I talked to the O'Neill Center and they're offering you a scholarship.
Ooh, I remember that. And it was so exciting. You were so excited because you had been so down.
Because I really needed some direction at that time. I just didn't know what to do. I just felt really stuck. And so I went and I didn't really even know what to expect there. And there was about a handful of us they call fellows who are part of that program.
Ooh.
And some really, like, Carrie O'Malley was there, who's, you know, very well-known actress, and some other really eclectic, like, interesting people. Everyone had kind of a different strategy for what they wanted to create, because that's the beautiful thing about cabaret, is you can kind of create anything. But I really had no mission in mind. I was just like, I'll come up with something. And Donna McKechnie was one of our teaching artists, and she, you know, we became pretty close. You get close to everybody there because you're kind of living together, and it's like summer camp. And I had this idea, like, what if, you know, princesses get all the glory? The princesses are on all the lunch boxes and the shirts. Where are the princes? And so then the idea kind of was born out of that, mm-hmm. and we started making these mashups, and that's how it was born. And then when we came back, I was like, I'm not going to waste this 11 days of exploration.
Right. And you performed it pretty soon after that, right? When was your first performance?
I don't even remember.
Maybe in the fall?
It was in the fall because it was like October, November.
Yeah, I think it was.
And the conference was in August. And so Tracy and I just said, let's just keep working together. Let's just keep working on this. And we did it at the Duplex. I did, I think, 3 or 4 performances at the Duplex, invited people.
It must have been November or December, because I don't think I was there for the performance. So
you must have been doing Nutcracker.
Yeah. So it was actually really cool, because the first time he performed it, I went to his, like, final run through. He rented a studio and performed it as if, you know, a dress rehearsal kind of deal. And so we were in this little studio somewhere in close to Times Square, I remember. And it was me, his pianist, Brett, and Donna McKechnie came. So I got to see
him perform. I remember I emailed Donna. I was like, would you want to come see this run through? And she said, yeah. And I was like, okay, thinking she'll probably not show up because she's so, to me, it's such an idol and a very important person.
But she was there.
And she came, and it was just her and Steven in a tiny room with me running through the show, and she gave me amazing notes.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That was cool.
That is really cool. It was such a... I was super excited just to be there watching him, and then Donna was there. It was really cool. So throughout, since 2013, you've performed the show now, I want to say at least like 15 different times. How has the show changed with each time you performed it?
Well, I mean, I do think
or
that,
has it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that especially the end, I feel like any show kind of act two is always troublesome, any musical. So this feels a bit like that. Like, I don't really know how to finish the show. And it's also because it's so personal, mm-hmm. and my life has evolved since then. 2013 was a struggle. there was some stuff that happened with my family that was really, really painful. And then, so at that time, I really needed to kind of work through those emotions. And then I brought it on tour, and I did it in Orlando. I did it in LA. I did it in Laguna Beach. I did it in Houston.
Right.
And I remember Houston, I was very nervous because I mean, I was pretty honest about my family stuff, and they were awesome. Maybe some of it went over their heads, but then the
well, I don't think, I mean, you're personal, but you don't say anything that's like, I don't, not offensive.
Yeah, nothing offensive.
You just state some facts.
Yeah. Yeah, but some people don't like facts. Facts are...
All right, moving on. Keep going.
And so then Disney asked me to do a version of it for the Disney Cruise Line, but I had to use Disney songs. So we swapped everything out except for a couple things, and we turned them into, you know, I used only Disney songs. Mm-hmm. Like instead of Museums, I sang Out There.
Oh.
Right. So it didn't work to me as well,
yeah.
But they want to make it a big commercial for Disney, which is, makes sense.
Okay.
And then when we did it in South Carolina.
Oh, right. That was the last time, 2 years
ago.
Was
the last time I did it.
3 years ago.
Yeah. Because honestly,
2 years ago.
The struggle for me has been, it's about a prince and like, I'm in my 40s now. You know what I mean? I feel like talking about being a prince feels a little behind me at this moment, but considering the fact that we've really started our parenting journey and that everything's happened with the pandemic, it felt like Act Two, I was able to sort of clarify
mm-hmm.
all of that now in a way that I hadn't been able to do before.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so the opportunity came about for you to perform the show at the Walton Performing Arts Center in Fayetteville, Arkansas. How did that happen? And, you know, what was your process to get ready since you haven't been performing for the past 10 months? You know, what were some of, like, how did you prepare? How was that preparing?
Well, I mean, you were there for most of it, but...
I was.
So what ended up happening was the executive director there knows me from when I worked at a theater he worked at in like 2003.
Okay.
And we've stayed in touch through social media, through my email. And if anyone knows me as a coach, I love to talk about this stuff through marketing. So I'm actually, by the way, building a course I'm going to be teaching in March called the Creative Marketing Map, where I'm going to teach a lot of this stuff.
So
I don't say too much, but if you want to learn more about this kind of stuff, come check out the Broadway Life Coach Facebook group, because I talk a lot about it. But he ended up reaching out and saying, you know, hey, you're in Texas, would you want to drive up to Arkansas and do your show? And I was like, I mean, this was like in September or something, and I was like, sure.
Oh, right. That was a while ago.
And I was like, January is so far away.
I know. This whole year of January, yeah. Felt like it was never going to come, and now it's here. It's really weird.
And, you know, the only thing was my music director is in New York, and I can't really do the show without her. She's a big part of it. And so he said that if she wanted to come down, they'd pay for her. And so we were able to make it work in a way. You know, they can only do limited capacity.
So what, it was like a 1,200 seat theater, 1,500 seat theater?
And they maxed out at 200 people, mm-hmm. and, you know, everyone had to wear masks and be socially distanced.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't be any closer than 12 feet from the edge of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just
Did you keep to that? I didn't notice.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure you did.
Yeah, well, like, they had speakers.
Oh, you did? Oh, they did. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. So what was the preparation like? Like, getting back, like... Were you just like vocalizing all the time, or like what were you doing to get ready?
I was trying to vocalize every day and then sing through the show like every other day,
mm-hmm.
as much as I could, because I needed to get stamina back. And I honestly could have done more. I think maybe even started a little bit earlier than I did, because mm-hmm. I was still feeling like it wasn't really all there. But
don't you think you would always feel like that?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm so hard on myself as a singer, especially. Mm-hmm. I just don't have like classical training the way that a lot of people do, so I'm very insecure about it. But so anyway, I was vocalizing every day, listening to old voice lesson tapes from when I was learning Wicked.
Oh, yeah.
Which also brought back a lot of, like, crazy PTSD from learning Wicked, because that was so stressful.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So anyway, that's what I did, mm-hmm. and rewrote some of the stuff, and then Tracy and I did a couple like FaceTime run-throughs, which were challenging because of the delays.
There was a delay, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was really frustrating.
Really hard. I didn't even think about that.
It was really frustrating. But we did it.
Yeah.
It was just good for us to kind of get our minds back in it. And then, yeah, that's how
and
I prepped.
And then that was it.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so then we drove up on a Friday. It was about an 8-hour drive. It was much, I mean, not that I didn't map it. I knew that it was going to be 8 hours, but for some reason, I always think that GPSs are going to be wrong. And I'm like, oh, it's really not going to be that long. It was 8 hours away. And we actually had a really, really magical, fun weekend. And being Brett's husband for, I guess we've been married almost 10 years now. Anytime he does something like this, I feel like it's really my job just to kind of like try and keep him as calm as possible. Because the very first time he did his solo show, not this solo show, but his own cabaret show, he was like, I think I have PTSD from how stressed out he was. And this was in like 2008, maybe. We were like pretty newly dating.
Well, let me just say, I think we opened The Little Mermaid the night before my show.
Oh, yeah. Like, what were you thinking?
I don't know what I was
what
thinking.
What was he thinking? Anyways.
The
he...
show was supposed to open in November, but right, because of the strike, it got pushed off, and I'd already scheduled the day. So it turned out...
So I have PTSD from the very first time he did his one-man show, and he was so stressed out, and I, like, was just trying to calm him down the whole time. And then I remember after he got through that show, I remember we got in a cab, and he literally, like, collapsed. Yeah. Not collapsed, but just, like, ugh. And then he was, like, instantly sick.
He was, like, sick
for, like, 3 days.
Yeah. It was weird.
It was weird. So
my body had, like, this total reaction.
Yeah, because you were just so stressed out. And also, so I think I'm, in my head, that's always kind of in there. So I just try and, like, be there and do whatever I can to calm him down, and whatever he needs me to do, I'll do. And so we drove up there, and it was really fun. But the drive there, you know, we've been in Texas, and it's been pretty mild and warm here for the winter. Like today, for instance, I think it's going to be like 75 degrees, and it's January. So we've been in this like warmer climate, and I didn't think that it would be that much colder. We drove up, it ended up being super windy the whole time and pretty cold. And then once we got into Arkansas, it was snowing. So it was like, it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But it was totally crazy because we're just not used to it. So the day of the show, I couldn't really anticipate how much excitement I was going to feel. Like, as you know, I'm not performing. I was just going and just being a supportive husband. And I got to the stage rehearsal, and I was just like overcome with excitement and emotion, and like I felt almost like such a sad loss too, mm-hmm. like watching you, and I kept running around the house, like taking videos. I took a ton of video from every angle I could think of to walk around because there was no one, you know, obviously it was a rehearsal, no one was there. And it was just so exciting to be back in a theater and to see, you know, obviously the man I love performing. And, but it just like reminded me like what a crazy year this has been and just how sad it is. The theater is kind of basically non-existent right now. So it just felt like a real gift to be there and like an honor to see you do it. And I was so proud and so excited. And I mean, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect to have such emotion. I mean, I do have emotion most of the time when I see these shows, but not that much. And some different things like really popped out for me this time. I mean, first of all, your medleys in the show are really, really good, and they've always been really good. And I think for the most part, they've always kind of been the same. But the medley of there's got to be something better than this, that's like my most favorite. So what else is in that?
Giants in the Sky.
Giants in the Sky, and there's got to be something better than this. It's a really great medley. And then he does this whole medley of,
I think that was actually, I have to give credit to Lenny Watts for that. That was his idea.
Okay. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. And then I also love, there's a whole waltz medley. And throughout the medley, what are the songs? Do I Hear a Waltz?
Do I Hear a Waltz? I mean, we put every single waltz in there, right? So it's framed around Do I Hear a Waltz? But we also put in Once Upon a Dream.
Once Upon a Dream.
There's some interludes of I Feel Pretty.
Oh, right. That's right.
And Someday My Prince Will Come.
Yeah.
And then there's the 10 Minutes Ago with You. Mm-hmm. So there's all these different waltzes in there.
And that's always like a favorite part of the show for me, just because like it's about when he finds his prince and I'm his prince. And so sometimes like that's like a built-in emotion for me. And then, you know, another moment of the show that I always, always, always love, and I think that he doesn't probably like it or enjoy it as much, is when he sings her voice from The Little Mermaid. Mostly because he sounds amazing in it. And then it just reminds me of when we first started dating, because that's what he was working on. So I went and saw him do his first performance of it. And, you know, it just brings back, it's like flashback in time, and I just get really emotional. You also, this time around, museums like really made me emotional. There's like this point when you like kind of are staring to your right and you grab your dad's hand, mm-hmm. and it's just like, It's so. it's really sad and emotional, and it like really makes me
emotional.
It makes me emotional.
I love that song so much, and I remember when I used to work on it. I worked on it in Craig Cornelia's class, and it was just like, yeah. I mean, it's. I think if you don't know that song, I actually put a clip of it on my Instagram the other day. It's a gorgeous song. Stephen Letvac wrote a brilliant, it's like a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's really pretty. And yeah. And what I loved about it this time is that I feel like I haven't seen you do this show that many times in performance, but as many times as you've done it. And this time I felt like you were able to contain your emotion a little bit better. Because I've noticed in the past that you've actually cried while performing that song.
Yeah.
And if you did cry this time, I didn't notice it. And it was so effective, and your voice sounded beautiful. Mm. And then there's this other moment that you've added, because I don't think it was there before, where you sang, what is the name of that song from Big Fish?
Oh, yeah, Fight the Dragons.
Fight the Dragons. And when I saw it in rehearsal, I didn't really, like, think about it. But then when I saw it in the performance, you're like, I was imagining you speaking to our child that we would like to have and hope to have this year. And so that was like a really emotional moment for me as well.
Those songs are like right after each other.
Too. Yeah. And like, yeah. And then also I love how you ended with Brave. And then you also sing I Am No Prince. And I just love that song.
Aww.
And I love you singing it.
Aww. It's on my album.
It is on your album. So, yeah, that's right.
You can listen to it on Spotify.
So that was kind of like what it felt like for me. And I was like literally just there watching. And how was it for you once you got there and realized, oh my God, I actually have to perform? Because even when things are normal, when I get to gigs, I'm like, oh God, now I have to perform. So what was that feeling like for you?
It was so cold. And I honestly just had to go, well, I think I told you this. I was kind of in my head approaching it like, this is my farewell tour. Because if I never do this again, I want this to be amazing.
And you succeeded because you sounded the best thing I've ever heard.
And I think once I made that decision psychologically in my head, like, this is my share farewell tour, which means I'll probably do it 8 more times.
You should do it 8 more times. But go ahead.
But I think that when I made that decision in my head, I was like, this is just going to be for the people that are here. And it's Arkansas, and like, you know, it took a lot of the pressure off of myself. I think sometimes in New York, I put all this pressure on myself, mm-hmm. especially after opening a Little Mermaid. I was like,
yeah, that was a different circumstance yeah. completely, but yeah.
But I feel like, you know, I've also done the show enough that I feel it's like some of it's kind of in my body.
Yeah.
So the pressure was off
Great.
In that way. The only thing that was frustrating was the suit I rented. I rented from the Black Tux, a beautiful suit, 3-piece suit, because we don't have, everything's in storage. And the pants that they sent me initially were too tight. So I asked them to send me, because I've put on some weight during the pandemic, I asked them to send me a new pair of pants, and I forgot the new pair of pants and brought the tight ones. And I was so mad about it before we went on stage.
But he was really mad, but the reason I was there to calm him down, and I was like, listen,
they were so
yes
tight.
They are a little tight, but like no one's really going to be able to see that, and also like it's a show, like things should be a little tighter, you can show it off.
Show
it's
it
okay
off.
It's okay.
You did say that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got emotional when we first got on stage, just to be back into a theater. I got a little bit excited, and I honestly felt so honored
mm-hmm.
that they would ask me to be their first show back.
Yeah.
You know, that was an honor. And
yeah.
I, of course, like, don't necessarily, I'm like, me of all people? And then I kept thinking about remember when we were in Charleston and we went and saw Kristen Chenoweth?
Mm-hmm.
I kept thinking about that, and I just kept thinking, be Kristen Chenoweth. Like, just, you know, remember how yeah. she was? Just like, she just owned it, yeah. you know? I was like, just be Kristen Chenoweth. Mm-hmm. She's just so confident on stage.
She was super real. At one point, she told a story about how she got some chicken. What was that chicken place?
Kicking chicken.
Yeah. I was like, anyways, go
She's
ahead.
Like, she had indigestion.
Yeah, she was like super real.
So anyway, I just kept thinking of that. I was like, this is me being that.
Yeah.
So that was a great sort of approach. And, you know, the challenge performing for me too was the audience was spread out. So
yeah.
you couldn't really hear. I couldn't hear laughter or if they were really with me.
They
and
were.
So, and sometimes were. In my head, if I start to think, oh God, they're not with me, I need to keep moving forward. Just keep going, as opposed to like breathe, take time, allow them, like, you know, but I'm like, oh God. So sometimes in my head, like I felt like in between songs mostly, I would just kind of rush through the story or the dialogue. And that's one thing I wish I had just kind of breathed a little mm-hmm. bit more. But I didn't know how the audience was feeling. I couldn't hear.
Yeah.
And usually I can read the audience a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, let me assure you, the audience was with you. At the end, they gave him 2 standing ovations, which was really sweet.
Yeah, that felt
and,
good.
And they were definitely laughing and excited to give you like applause at the end of each song. It was just a really beautiful moment. And I'm super proud of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Well, I honestly was so glad you could come because you weren't possibly not going to come because of work.
Yeah.
And having you there made all the difference. And then also, you were so sweet. Y'all, he drove the whole 8.5 hours back.
I did. It was a long drive.
I offered and he said, no, I'm the Shuford chauffeur.
Yeah, it was Shuford chauffeur. Shuford chauffeur.
Well, thank you for your support. It means a lot.
Of course, I love you. And it was so fun to see you do it again. And I hope maybe that you will do it again.
Maybe.
Maybe. We'll yeah.
All right. Now we're going to move on to a segment that we call
Spotlight on Love.
So someone wrote in to us Instagram. Yeah. Do we say their name?
I'm going to say no because they use a location and say no because of that.
Okay. So the question is, how can you find people that want relationships and not just sex on apps? It's been slim picking so far here in conservative Magnolia, Texas, which is not far from where we are, actually. But I don't want to drive an hour into Houston.
Well,
let me just say, what's more important? Dating, meeting somebody who's more relationship oriented, or driving, not driving an hour to Houston?
Right. Because that's not that far.
It's not that far.
Magnolia to Houston is really not that far.
And if it's a priority, it's worth it. But I get it. Like, it's not convenient. And also, I don't know how you're going to meet people during the pandemic, honestly. But I think that the best thing to do is if you're going to use apps to meet people, then you just need to be so explicit about what you want.
Yeah, just be really clear about what you want, what your boundaries are.
Not looking for sex. Looking for relationships. Yeah. Like, put it in the bio, right? It may mean that not that many people respond because most people who are on apps are looking for sex.
Yeah, because that's what they're for, right? Yeah, no, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know that all of them are, but I think...
Oh, like even... when I see here the word apps, I think about like...
Grindr
and other things like that. But I guess there's dating apps. Yeah. Sorry.
But like, what's the swipe left, swipe...
Anyway. Tinder,
yeah. Right. But I also think that like, there's something too about like going for what it is you want and making it a priority.
Yeah. And just putting it out there and expecting nothing, and you'll probably, you know, get something great in return, you know, because you'll only attract what you actually want. You won't attract people sending you whatever.
I mean, the problem, I'll speak to my experience. Apps didn't exist before we were dating, but I do recall, you know, growing up in Orange, Texas, a conservative town, there's so many closeted people. And so you're meeting people. So I'm just saying, Stephen, in case you don't like think about it, but it's like, I just think about how hard it must be because you've got a lot of people on there who are only looking for hookups because they're closeted and they don't want to come out because they're in a conservative town.
Got it.
So how do you meet somebody? I think you have to go where it's more acceptable, where more people feel comfortable being out. I think you have to make that a priority. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just once a week, it's worth the 2-hour drive to put yourself out there and meet somebody.
Because if somebody wants to date you and you want to go on a date in Houston, or maybe you can even recommend that like you meet somewhere halfway. Between Houston and Magnolia, right? Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know how people are dating right now. I would think it's so challenging.
Yeah.
But I think if relationship matters to you, then you have to make it a priority in everything you do, and you got to tell people, right? You got to tell, because by saying it out loud, you're telling the universe what you want.
Right.
So in your bio on whatever app you're on, you need to say, I'm looking for a serious relationship.
Yeah.
I'm not looking to fool around.
Yeah. Let them know.
Yeah.
Tell them.
Hope that helps.
We hope that helps.
And if you want our completely unqualified relationship advice, make sure you shoot us a DM on Instagram or shoot us an email at broadwayhusbands.com. Thank you for listening to the Broadway Husbands podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. And it would really help us out if you leave a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. Don't forget to check out Broadway Life Apparel and our new designs that are released every month. And on this podcast, we encourage you to
love who you love
and love what you do.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.